This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hi, so today on the podcast, I have a slightly different episode for you. So if you're listening in real time, this week is World Autism Acceptance Week. And today I'm speaking with Trish O'Dwyer from a company called Autism Threads. So Trish is the owner of an online shop that sells t-shirts, prints and accessories to raise positive awareness of autism, support autistic people and autistic charities, and just start conversations around autism. She also writes a blog and a monthly newsletter. And Trish and I today, we do talk a lot about her products and how they came to be, how she created them and sourced them. But also importantly, we talk a lot about autism as well. So I know that, you know, some of you may be thinking, well, that's actually not what I'm here for. I'm just here to hear about the products. But I urge you, please do listen to this conversation with Trish. I think it's really important. So Trish started Autism Threads with the goal of raising positive awareness for autism, starting conversations. As I say, she donates some of her profits to charitable organisations. And I think hers is a really interesting and different story. And I would love for you to take a listen. And as always, please do let me know what you think. So now I would love to introduce you to Trish. So hi, Trish. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Vicky.
Oh, you're so welcome. Can we start with you please give an introduction to yourself, to Autism Threads, and what you do, please?
Sure. Myself, I'm Trish. You will pick up from my accent that I was born and raised in South Africa, although my mum is Australian, and I married a Brit. So there's a bit of everything in there. We live in Tunbridge Wells in Kent, and I started an business, which is an online shop called Autism Threads, a few years ago, mainly around our youngest son, Henry, who is 11. He is nonverbal autistic. He has ADHD. He's a little bit demand avoidant. He has really complex sensory needs as well. So just having had two children prior to Henry was a whole different experience. And I did not know much about autism until it came to be part of who my son is. And just felt so inspired to raise some positive awareness and support families like ours. So that's where it all began. I recently turned 50 last week, and that was on St. Patrick's Day. And interestingly, I am Patricia O'Dwyer, born on St. Patrick's Day, but I'm not Irish.
Well, a belated happy birthday.
50 is quite empowering.
I just turned 40 2 days ago, which also feels empowering.
March, baby. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good. New decade. It's exciting. So if you don't mind, Trish, because we're timing the release of this episode to coincide with National Autism Awareness Week, would you mind giving us, and I completely understand this isn't going to be academic, this is just going to be your knowledge and your experiences, but would you mind just talking a little bit about what autism is, how it might present, and some challenges a person with autism might face, knowing that there's a huge spectrum and I know this is extremely broad question, but just for somebody who perhaps doesn't know, who knows very little.
It's really interesting that, because it is difficult, you know, when you're trying to start conversations with people and tell them about autism, it's not something you can really sum up in a sentence. Unlike other things that people know, you know, maybe more physical conditions or cancer or whatever, everybody knows basically, but autism needs more than a few sentences. It's also can be quite technical and academic. I tend not to focus on those. There's a lot of, because of it being such a vast spectrum, there are people who prefer to call it a neurological disorder and people who don't like the word disorder or disability, or I tend personally not to focus on any of that. For me, autism is basically part of who my child is, and it always will be. Autism is not visually recognizable. That's the thing I find people need to hang on to the most. So you will not be able to look at someone and know that they're autistic. And that it really is around three things. It's social communication, social imagination, and social interaction. And those are often three criteria that you need in order to get a diagnosis as well. And for me, those sum up perfectly my son's autism. So to me, anybody who is autistic will have either difficulty or differences in those three areas. So communicating socially, you know, my son is nonverbal, but it doesn't mean he can't talk. He can talk, and he has vocabulary. He cannot communicate socially, so he cannot even have a two-word exchange with someone. He's extremely clever, and he knows the tone of a question as well. So he doesn't answer questions. That means he couldn't tell you how old he is or where he lives or what his mum's name is. He might know a couple of those things, but he won't answer them. Social imagination is a little bit trickier to understand because it's, for me anyway, I've interpreted it as something around this theory of mind. So where you get the sort of very literal thinking that I think people often misunderstand as being lack of empathy, which is not true. For me, I kind of use an example of like, you could take a 3-4-year-old into a restaurant and say, we're going for lunch. And very quickly, that little toddler will understand the concept of going out for lunch. You know, it's in a place and we sit down at the table and there's nice food and I get a treat and that's lunch. When you take an autistic person or a person who is autistic into a restaurant, every single experience is different. It's new every single time because it might be a different restaurant. It might look differently. They take in all the detail before they then understand the social concepts of we're just out for lunch. So that's the sort of more the social imagination side. And again, in vastly varying degrees. And then obviously the interaction, you know, from difficulty with just struggling in group conversations and chit chat and banter and things like that to real one-on-one difficulty with interacting with any other person. And it really is because, you know, they are such wonderful human beings. They are human like the rest of us, but their brains are wired differently. And that's all it is for me. I kind of don't go into the techie stuff too much. I'm just a mum.
Thank you for that. And it's I find as well, it is really hard to sum up because every child, every person with autism, they're so different. I mean, as we all are, so different. And I feel like you can't sort of say it's this or it's that. I was mentioning to you at the beginning of the call that my 9-year-old was diagnosed with autism. And I'm sure that if we were to speak and we were to talk about our sons and how autism presents, there might be some similarities, but I think there'll probably be so many differences as well. And this is the thing that I have struggled the most with actually since getting the diagnosis, is that it's not one thing. And also in my experience, it changes as well. So my son has some issues now and some challenges that we didn't have a year ago, for example. So one thing we didn't touch on is sensory things, but he's becoming a lot more sensitive to touch. So for example, today it's sunny outside, so we put some sun cream on before he went to school, but he has to put his own sun cream on because he doesn't like the feeling of somebody else touching his skin. So I supervise, but I don't do it. And then, but he isn't happy because he says he can feel it on his skin. So he can feel. He's very aware of the fact he has something on his skin. Yeah. And that makes him really uncomfortable. And this is a new thing. Last summer, this wasn't really a thing. So I think that yeah, it's something that's very hard to explain to people. Absolutely. I think.
And I think the sensory side of autism is so underrated and researched, because it has such an enormous impact on their lives. And also just because, you know, an autistic person can communicate, like people I think often sort of think my situation is more clear cut because my son just doesn't speak, so he's automatically into whatever, a special school. But, you know, an autistic child doesn't know how to think the way we think. So for him to, your son to describe how that cream feels for him, you know, he can't change the way that that's making him feel. We can't kind of just sort of negotiate with him and go, oh, well, it's okay. It's just cream. It'll sink in. It's not the same for them. And they feel things to a level that we could never imagine. You know, you put yourself in his shoes and think of how much harder it will be for him to cope with everything else that's going on at school today because he's got this layer of cream on him.
Absolutely.
It feels like, I don't know, to us would feel like having a wet blanket on us the whole day. You know, it would drive you mad. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's and there's all these challenges that, yeah, you don't foresee as a parent, because you're right. I mean, we spoke this morning about, okay, I can't actually do any, you know, you need to have some sort of sun protection on, but I don't know whether we need to research sprays or different creams, and I don't know whether there is a solution. But yeah, you're right, I'm very conscious of the fact that his day won't go as he would have liked, you know, as everyone would like their day to go, because at the back of his mind all day he's going to be really bothered by the fact that his skin feels different. And it's such a hard thing, I think. I'm only just recently starting to get my head around these sorts of things, but I think this is one thing that makes autism really hard to understand, is because to a lot of people, they'd say, well, that doesn't make sense, or that's not logical, or, you know, they can't put themselves in the shoes of the person who's feeling that way.
Yeah, I think that's often one of the hardest parts about autism awareness is, you know, there is empathy, and that can be very surface level. But when you are, and you will find it in the close friendships you have as well, you know, they'll come and go, because you know, in order to be a true friend to an autistic person or to their parent, you really do, you have to take a moment and you have to really put yourselves in their shoes, and you have to believe that these raindrops falling on this boy's skin feel like knives, and how would you feel in that situation? And it's quite hard to get people to go that distance, because it's so unfamiliar to them.
Yes.
And you will, you know, when you tell people about your child's autism or something they might be struggling with that day, your friends will try to, you know, and it's a perfectly natural, and actually it comes from a good place. They try to sort of, they want to help. And so they try to sort of normalize some of the things, you know, like I can remember saying once, my son, he refused to go to the toilet at school, and it was becoming a real problem. And, you know, because he also can't communicate when he needs the toilet. And the other mum had sort of said, well, oh, my son never went to the toilet at school either. He hated it. You know, and that's, she's trying to make me feel better, but I'm wanting to say to her, you just don't get it. You don't understand. This is a whole different ballgame. Because he can't cope with the sensory issue of needing the toilet all day while he's sitting there, you know, or we can't figure out why he won't go, kind of thing. So yeah, it's a whole other journey. And like you mentioned earlier, things will come and go. You know, the one thing I've learned is, well, you don't, when you're supporting an autistic child, things don't work in a sort of step. You know, you take one step at a time and you make little bits of progress at a time. There are huge setbacks and regressions, and it's very inconsistent. Everything about raising a child who's autistic is so inconsistent, because we feel different every day, all of us, don't we? We wake up in different moods. Some days we feel more sensitive than others. And some days, you know, they're developmentally in different stages or emotionally at different stages. So those added sensory things can have a huge impact through different stages of their lives and not others. And others, I guess, they will come to understand as they mature and learn to deal with or cope with better. but the stress of it will still be there.
Yes, and that's actually, for me, was probably the biggest learning, is that it doesn't look the same, or it isn't the same every day.
Mm.
And that there will be things that were once a problem and now, you know, are okay for whatever reason, and then there'll be new challenges. And that's something that I wasn't anticipating, and I don't think anyone really tells you.
No, it's very difficult to deal with as the parents, you know. It's upsetting and it's worrying. The deep concern is a huge impact, you know, it has a huge impact. Yeah. And
I think it's also hard for those around you when you talk about those supporting you, because family members, for example, they might get used to, okay, so this child behaves in this way, or this child doesn't like this sensation, or, and then that changes. And I think it's a lot for everyone in the child's life, actually, it's just hard, isn't it? It's just hard for everyone involved.
Yes, it's very hard.
And then, of course, you know, the other layer here, and I think we'll sort of lead in nice into talking a bit about your products, Trish, is that we're talking, you know, about how challenging it can be as the friend or relative of a person with autism, or the parent of a child with autism. But then there's, of course, everyone else in the world who has no idea.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Who has no idea that maybe they have no idea what autism is. They have certainly have no idea that your child has autism, and
get judged.
Yeah. And not just children, but adults as well, I think, because as you say, it's not something that's immediately visible or obvious. Mm-hmm. As are lots of, you know, there are lots of people talked about, you know, lots of hidden disabilities. You can't necessarily tell someone has a visual impairment, for example. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think it presents lots of challenges. So it'd be really nice to talk a bit about why you set up Autism Threads and what your aims are really with the products that you sell.
Yeah, I set it up for that exact reason. You know, I had my autistic son, his siblings are quite a bit older than him, and I had been through the whole toddler primary school. Well, they were in primary school midway through when Henry was born, and then as his autism came to light, I had no idea what it was either. I mean, I'd never even heard of autism. I had absolutely no idea. I also thought it would be something visually recognizable. And I had no idea about anything to do with the world of special educational needs. It wasn't in my world, and so I didn't pay attention to it. And I couldn't believe the way people were treating Henry and I, even as a toddler, the kind of looks and stares and the way people judged not only him, but me as his mum, like I'm some sort of terrible mum. And it really struck me, because I knew that I had done the same thing prior to having had Henry. I knew that I had given a parent a dirty look in a supermarket with a kid that was probably having a major meltdown that I just assumed was having a tantrum, and thought, I know I had done it. So I just suddenly felt so ashamed. And then I thought, yeah, but how will they know? You know, we're so desperate for people to find out about our child's autism and to ask us questions, and just for us to be able to explain, and for us not to have to kind of shout it out constantly. And even worse, you know, we go and apologize. You find yourself walking up going, I'm so sorry, he's autistic. We shouldn't have to apologize for them. And we're so desperate to talk to people, but they don't know to ask. I would never have had the courage to go up and go, oh, is he autistic? Imagine if he wasn't, you know. And so I just thought, I have to do something. I have to, you know, initially it started around my own son. I had no plans to set up a business. I just thought, I need a t-shirt. I need something visual, you know, so that people can get a quick heads up. And so I went looking for an autism type t-shirt, and I really didn't like what I saw, and thought, you know, a couple of years later, I just thought, you know, I just got launched into this world of special needs mums, and it just opened my eyes, and I just thought, I have to do something. I'm completely passionate about this, and I want the awareness to be positive. There's so much negativity out there, and there's so much shouty type of language, and I just thought, that's wrong. For people to accept autism, first they have to actually understand it, and they will never understand it if we don't give them the information. So I felt like with some of my products, they are, you know, caption t-shirts with a whole sentence on the back. And it's not really about this leery message to everyone. It's just something for someone who's standing next to you in the queue or sitting at the airport, who notices something and can then read the t-shirt and think, ah, and then they feel okay to ask those questions. Because as a mum, all I want is for people to just ask. Then I can talk about my child and my child's autism, because as we've mentioned, they're all different. And I cannot stand having to apologize for him all the time, so that's where it began. The products are obviously based around raising positive awareness. I wanted things that I would want my child to wear. So stylish and tasteful with nice colors, as organic as possible and as sensory soft and, you know, comfortable as possible. And then to embrace the autism family, to support the carers and the mums and parents that are with those children, to help their siblings embrace autism, feel like they can have conversations. If they've got a really cool kind of logo t-shirt on and their friends think, oh, that's nice, then it gives them a chance to talk about their sibling. And then also I went into this sort of fashion side of it, because I thought, well, you know, I don't need to raise awareness amongst the autism community. We eat, sleep and breathe it 24/7. It's the general public you want to reach out to. So came up with the idea of more fashion, generic focused t-shirts with slogans on them that everyone can resonate with. And when you buy one of those t-shirts, you support an autism charity. So started on that. And then the accessories, the smaller products, are things that are very affordable. They're typically things that you have with you when you're out and about. So lanyards and pin badges and tote bags. And again, it's just an opportunity to start a conversation. I'd like people to, you know, I don't think parents, again, are also the parents of autistic children are so vastly different in their opinions and their journeys. And I think you come to fully accepting your child's autism at different stages. And one of the best things about having set up this business and going to the markets and events is the conversations I have and me learning. I've learned so much. I've learned not to judge parents whose opinions are different to mine. You know, if you need to believe that the MMR jab caused your child's autism, that's actually okay. And we can all have our different opinions on the therapies they need, but we can all come together and show a united front and kind of drawing people in to learn about autism rather than pushing them away by going, don't call my child this and don't use that word and don't, you know. I've learned a lot in the process and I've met some incredible people. So, and like you mentioned earlier, if my son's wearing that t-shirt and one person gets to clock it, then that's amazing for me. You know, I'm not trying to, you'll never stop people's judgments. And some people don't want to know, you know, even when you do go up and say, I'm so sorry, he's autistic. They go, yeah, sure he is. And you're like, oh, okay. one person at a time and, you know, embracing the community around us. Because it's invisible, the parents become invisible. And you know, when you have a market stand or something, it's really fascinating because you realize that literally, it really is one in 10 people who walks by actually has a connection to autism. And that's amazing, you know, that's amazing. We need to support each other more.
That's really interesting. And I think you're right. I think since speaking out about my son's autism, I found out about, you know, people, a few adults that I know with autism or people who have children with autism. And I never knew that. And it's almost like if you're on the outside, it's almost like you don't know until you know. Mm-hmm. And when someone finds out, you know, if you're open with people and you talk about it, all of a sudden there are all these connections and people are happy to talk. But it's almost like until you have that diagnosis or you start going down, you know, you start looking into it more, it almost feels like it's something that people don't talk about, and which is one of the reasons that I am keen to talk about it, as I know you are, because I just think the more of us that talk, it normalizes it.
Absolutely.
And it just, you know, I'm not quite sure looking back why, not even looking back, but just I'm not sure in general really why, but it is something that people don't tend to want to talk about. And in fact, I know for myself that sometimes if I mention my son having autism, there are people who will ask questions and want to know more. But then there are other people who are clearly uncomfortable and almost look like they wish you hadn't said that because they're not quite sure what to say. And they'd rather just not have that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, partly why I put so much information on my t-shirts, so that you don't have to. I mean, it's quite funny because when you have a market stand as well, it's amazing how, you know, how autistic people can behave. They've come to a market supposedly to shop, and yet they don't want you to make eye contact with them. They don't want you to go, "Hi, would you like to look at my t-shirts?" It's hilarious. So yes, I think the subtlety of the information sometimes allows people to absorb as much as they want to or not. And it certainly gives them a starting point as well, because obviously you don't want to feel like you don't really know. And I've also had the standard, you know, I can't count how many times people have gone, "Oh, well, the only thing I know about autism is the Rain Man," or, you know, yeah, you get that, but you have to rise above some of that. People are using very sort of social language, I've learned to just become, I used to get pretty angry, not at them, but I used to get really stressed about it and want it so badly for people to understand, but you have to be a little bit more polite and accepting and just go with what's in front of you and take your opportunities to be as positive as you can about your child's autism. And you're very brave, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. It's a complicated world. I totally get parents who don't want it known. If you are faced with a child who is in a mainstream school, you know, you've got a whole other ball game going on compared to the education journey my son's on, for instance. And I've learned to fully embrace that as well. And I do get it. And I think they will come to it at some stage. And sometimes it's matched with how much their own child is prepared to accept of their own autism. I've met children, 11-year-olds or whatever, who are completely, they think they are amazing. They are so proud of their autism. I rock it. I need this one-to-one support in my class. I'm good. There's others for whom that journey is completely different. And also autism has been perceived so badly in the past that you can't blame these parents. I mean, why would you want someone to think you're, you know, these really crazy ideas people have of autism, and then they start judging your child, and that's difficult too, you know. So I think it's really important for us, as especially autism parents, to just embrace each other.
Absolutely. And what I think is one thing of talking about how it's perceived and talking about it, one thing that I quite like actually is, because my son is young, he doesn't, and the first he heard of autism was when he got his diagnosis. He didn't know anything about it. He didn't know there was no stigma, there was no shame. If anything, he loves having, it sounds really silly, he loves having the label. He likes knowing this is why I think like this, this is why these things bother me. And he's fully embraced it, which I love. And he really likes to tell people about it, because for him it's such a big part of who he is. And it also, I think, it gives him comfort that because before we had the diagnosis he kept saying things like, "Oh, I think something's wrong with me, I don't know why I feel like this," and there was lots of anxiety around, why am I feeling like this, why does this bother me, what, you know, there was lots of why. And now he's like, okay, I know why. And yeah, I really like the fact that he's, I will almost want to say almost proud of having
the
diagnosis. And I think it's wonderful. And I guess where I'm coming at with this is that I really hope that because there's a generation of children coming through who hopefully don't have all of that stigma, that maybe things in time will change. If people,
they absolutely will. I can see it, you know. I have, when we get on an airplane with our son, I really do, he absolutely loves flying. He gets very, very excited for takeoff. And so I do. I feel for me, it's important to just mention to the people in the front of his seat and the people behind. I usually put one of his siblings behind because he does a lot of stimming and rocking in the seat. And I'm always blown away because it is always the 20-somethings who are absolutely amazing and cool and totally fine with it. Way more so than previous generations who have not had the information, who are stuck in those stigmas. So yeah, I think the schools are changing slowly but surely too. And it's so wonderful to hear about your son feeling proud. And even when you hear these stories about adults receiving diagnosis, you know, the vast majority of them feel that it's finally they understand themselves, so that it's a good thing. So and obviously for parents it's essential, because that's your ticket to accessing help to get their needs met.
Yes, and I know we are going a little bit off topic here, because I do want to come back to your business.
I think it's really interesting conversation,
and I really hope people are enjoying it. And I've noticed actually the last couple of weeks, I guess, as we're coming up closer to Autism Awareness Week, I've been reading lots more stories of adults who are diagnosed with autism at a later age, and every story that I've read has been really positive in terms of how the person feels about their diagnosis. And I think every single story that I've read, the person has said, you know, something along the lines of finally. I think it's very positive. So I just want to come very quickly back because so I'm just really curious actually about sort of how you went about actually, well, I've got a few questions actually. First of all, the actual product. So I'm really interested with your t-shirts, because it sounds like you had such a vision for them. How did you go about actually making that a reality? So you mentioned that you wanted them to look quite cool, and you wanted all the information on them, but you also wanted them to be very soft and very wearable, to cover those sort of sensory things. So how did you go about actually getting those made?
Yes, those were all wonderful dreams. I really visualized myself really actually designing a shirt, you know, and having it made. that doesn't work in the real world unless you have got vast quantities of money and you come from a fashion background and you personally know suppliers and pattern makers in China. And yeah, so I got some wonderful advice from a friend, a local friend who is very involved in fashion, who said, don't go there. You know, you have got to think, first of all, you've got to think about, imagine adding up how much every t-shirt costs, then you need it in every single size available, because obviously I'm going from children all the way through to adults. And if you want to buy a t-shirt from a supplier with no label in it, that actually costs more than buying the t-shirt with the label in it. So I was like, okay, so those will just need to be cut out because I can't afford that. And so yeah, you have to adjust. I absolutely stuck to my own sense of colors and fashion that I would want for my own son to wear. And then I think it helped a lot with, you know, my son's godmother is one of my really good friends who's a graphic designer. So I get friendship rates off her. And she came up with, I had come up with the kind of information and captions that I wanted. And then there was she came up with sort of three different scenarios, color palettes, that we thought we would tie the t-shirts into as well. I was very, and sometimes I still wake up and think, do I know what a brand is? I'm not so good at that. So she's been amazing on that front. And I totally resonated with the thread and the splatter pattern. You know, I was describing to her what autism was for me and how my son's brain was wired so differently, and that it's made up of all these millions of threads, you know. And then she's, well, then threads is clothing, threads is cotton, threads is the t-shirt, threads is everything that has to come together to make this business. So I absolutely loved that. The people who set up the website for me were also, I mean, I was initially thinking of calling it something completely random. And then the marketing side of things, they sort of impressed upon me that maybe having the word autism in there was actually going to be vital, because if you're not having a physical shop and you're competing with Google and then, you know, getting yourself onto the front page of Google, you're going to need to have those words in people's search engines and focus on what this business is for. So that was actually quite a brave step in a way, because I have had people come up and go, I love that caption, you know, crowded, noisy places make me anxious. And then they'll go, but I don't want the word autism anywhere. So I'm like, okay, you're not ready. You haven't embraced that journey just yet. And then my designer was also amazing with the fonts, the use of the fonts. And we, you know, a lot of the minty, cool colors to me, and, you know, felt very sort of calming and, I don't know if you could describe a font as kind of soft and embracing, but that's where we went. I just love what she's done. I love the splatter pattern as well. Just these kind of, you know, we're all different and splodges, and we're all, So she gets all the credit for the design. Absolutely. I was all about the wording. I have managed to find, you know, some wonderful organic t-shirts, which are super soft. I've tried to stick to 100% cotton wherever possible. And I've also initially wanted to really stay local. I wanted to use a local printer and a local. And then a pandemic came along. So that's also had to change a bit. But yeah, so yeah.
Thank you. So do you have your designs printed onto the t-shirts that you've sourced? Is that how that works?
Yes. So source the t-shirts and have them printed. And I've had to change, sadly, two of my printers have gone out of business during the pandemic. So you have to start all over again. But that is what it is for everyone.
Yeah, and that is really sad. And thank you for being so honest about all of that as well, about how you had a vision for the t-shirts and how you would do it and how that didn't quite go as planned, because you do sell t-shirts. You do have these physical t-shirts that you sell, even if the means is not quite as you envisioned at the outset, because I think I'm really grateful for you to be really honest about that, because you don't know what you don't know. And quite often I think it could have put you off, you could have sort of said, oh well, if I can't get someone to manufacture these t-shirts to my exact specification without a label, and you know, you could have said, oh, actually, if I can't have it exactly as I want it, do you know what, I'm just going to give up, I'm not going to do t-shirts. And I think that's understandable, people do make these decisions. So I think it's really commendable that you actually said, okay, no, I can't do it exactly how I thought I was going to do it, because I didn't know, but actually there is another way around it. Because I think it can be so easy to be thrown off when things aren't quite as simple or as straightforward or as inexpensive as you think they might be.
Absolutely. And it makes you really focus on why you're doing what you're doing and who it's for. And it became something like, well, let's embrace the whole autism community. There's neurotypical siblings who will happily wear a cheaper fashion t-shirt. You know, what are we trying to do here? Is it about the feel of the t-shirt, or is it about the message? And overall, for me, it became about the message. And I know that I've got a hugely sensory son who does wear my t-shirts. He loves them, and he's, you know, I can cut the label out if it needs to be cut out, but they're quite fine, and he's been fine with them. And then I sort of take my lead from that, if you like.
Yeah. And I think it's good that I really appreciate what you said about sort of sticking to, you know, what's actually the most important thing here. Mm-hmm. Because you can't always create exactly what you want for various reasons. Yeah. But I think knowing that, okay, the most important thing for you was the message, and getting the message out there meant that you knew what you could compromise on. And I think that's really good, because we all have to compromise somewhere.
Yes, you'll never get the perfect scenario. And then you also have to sort of remove yourself a bit and think, well, for me as well, I don't come from a fashion background, so I'm, you know, this can't be about some gorgeous fashion as much as I probably had dreamt of things like that initially. And it has to be affordable, you know, because also a lot of mums have to absolutely wing it with their children. They, you know, an autistic child who doesn't want to wear a t-shirt is not going to wear the t-shirt. So she's risking spending whatever, £15 on a t-shirt that they might hate or not want to wear. So there's no way I could make it, you know, as a small business, I would have, if I'd covered those dream, you know, designed my own clothing and wonderful fabric, they would have been so expensive. And I just think that would have, again, you know, so many of these autistic families are struggling, you know, to get those diagnoses in the first place and having to sacrifice financially to pay for private specialist reports. What could be more important, you know? So I felt, and again with the accessories, I had to come in with some really cheap and easy, wonderful, small, simple ways to help.
Your lanyards and your little cards as well. And I think, yeah, and I think it's really nice to have that, because you're right. If there's someone who says, well, I quite like a t-shirt, but I don't know if I can afford it, or because I don't know if my child, or I don't know if my child will wear it. Actually, it's nice they could say, well, we could try a lanyard, or we could try something more affordable, because they're looking for a solution, I assume. Yeah. And yeah, so I think that's great that you have things for those different price points as well.
Thank you.
And for what it's worth, I do think your t-shirts look fashionable.
Thank you. That's great. That means a lot. Thank you.
they honestly do look really nice. Yeah. I just wanted to I've only got a few questions, I promise, because I know we're coming towards the end of our time together. So I was interested when you were talking about doing like the market stalls earlier. And I just wondered, and purely out of curiosity, because I don't know, Trish, are you going to events for people with autism, or are you going to general market stalls in the hope of, you know, general sort of outdoor events, trying to raise awareness, or a bit of both?
A bit of both, actually. I started local. I just felt when you set up a small business and you on your own, you know, you start with your friends and family, don't you? And they all get suckered into buying one of your t-shirts and following you on Instagram. And honestly, for the first 6 months or so, those were my only sales on my website, were my own family and my relatives. And then the net broadens, and it's your friends and it's your social group. And then it's where you live. For me, it's the community. It's the other mums in my son's school. It's, you know, so I did come across some local general events that I think the lady who ran them probably thought it was very brave to do, but I did. I don't know why I do these things. I just felt I needed to start. And it was quite interesting, because, you know, I was in this beautiful little hall in Tunbridge Wells, and people were selling earrings and candles and gorgeous things. And then it was me, but my designer has made my market stand look amazing as well. So, it really does draw people in, and even just to see people walk past. And then I thought, you know, it doesn't matter if I don't sell anything, because all these people are going to walk past this stand and see the word autism. And I mean, that's epic. And the number of people who came and did buy one of those little small accessories as a way of contributing towards the charities my product supports was incredible. And then suddenly people were like, oh, you know, my godson's autistic. And so many people were like, oh, I've never seen things like this before. And the idea that they could even maybe buy their autistic relative a gift, which is amazing, because that's really hard to do as well, buying presents for autistic children, who, particularly mine, who's not accessing education. You know, you can't just Google boys' toys for age 5 to 7, because that's not going to cut it. That was amazing as well. And so I did start out very locally. And also those were the stands I could afford. And then I do now look for autism specific events, and I've been invited to a number of schools, and I've had a lot of success with the Christmas markets at some of the schools who have really big learning support departments or special needs schools, their Christmas markets. You know, I'd love to tap into the really big autism events, but I'm not in their price bracket for them, for their stands just yet. And also I'd have to turn up with so much stock. You know, I'd have to sell, I don't know, 700 t-shirts to break even at the National Autism Show in London. I do visit it, and I have some friends at stands who take my postcards and things and spread those around for me, which is amazing. And that is something I've really genuinely is one of my goals to aspire to get to the really big autism events.
Thank you. And I think it makes exact sense what you're saying, to start small and start local, because, well, for lots of reasons, as you say, for the cost, but also you were talking about how your first sales on your website were friends and family. Personally, I think that's a great way to start, because people are going to then wear or use your products, and other people will ask where they came from. I think word of mouth is how a lot of small businesses get off to a start. And I think even if your first however many customers are all people that you know, or your neighbors, or whatever, it doesn't actually matter. You just need to get the ball rolling somehow. And I'm always surprised when people who have their own small business aren't telling their friends and family about it, because some people do want to keep it a bit close to their chest. But my advice is, yeah, tell everybody and anybody, because you never know who somebody knows either. Absolutely. It's amazing the connections that you can make just by talking about what you do or what your friend does. Or
yeah, and it really is, it's such a I was advised about some of these things, but I don't think it really hits home until you actually do it. And your website isn't going to sell your products. I mean, it's quite shocking realization. You know, you sell your products, and this website, you know, you have to really work really hard. Yeah, and it starts with word of mouth. Absolutely.
Yes. And also even getting people to your website in the first place. I mean, really? I think it's very easy to think, oh, I'm going to put up a website and then I'm going to sell my products. But actually, there's creating your website is almost the easy part, isn't it?
And it does not look like that at all. It really is mind boggling. And you imagine it as if it's a shop front, but you don't have the footfall because people aren't seeing it. You know, you can still Google autism t-shirts now, and my website probably come up on page 7. I mean, who scrolls past even the third entry? So to work your way up the Google page takes an enormous amount, and it's the kind of work that you never thought you'd ever be doing. You know, admin-y type stuff and asking people for reviews and, I still have a lot to learn on SEO.
I think the thing is, running a small business is that there's just so much more to do than you could have ever imagined. And, you know, that's not even without the social media that you need to do and the marketing. And there's, I feel like the list of jobs for a small business owner is never ending. And there are always going to be the things that are higher up on the priority list. And my advice, for what it's worth, for anybody who thinks, oh gosh, there's so much, is just focus on what's working. So, I mean, if you know your SEO needs doing, but actually you make most of your sales on Instagram and think about your SEO when you've got the time and the headspace, I think that none of us can be doing all of the things all of the time.
No, that is really good advice. And I found you kind of, the things that you know you're not that confident at, you avoid and procrastinate. And of course, there's nobody pushing deadlines on you because it's just you and your own show. So that is really good advice. Focus on what works for you as well as what's working.
And speaking of advice, Trish, I would love to get, and I promise this is my last question, I would love to get your top piece of advice for other product business owners or small business owners. What's the one thing you think people should know?
It's a really good question. I think don't be sort of disillusioned by, you know, or fooled by people's success, especially on social media. There's you see it and you can't help but think all of these businesses with their very pretty posts and are you know, churning out the sales. That really isn't the truth. It takes years, pandemics aside. And like you suggested earlier, to focus on your passions and your strengths, you have to you know, you're going to have to work really hard. Things that you do in the background, you won't realize that will actually start to generate sales. You have to keep at it. And I think you have to tell yourself if you're a personality like me, who's not full of self-confidence, you have to tell yourself that this is your business. Because when you're a mum and you're working from home and it's your own small business, you can't believe how unimportant it can become to the rest of the family. They just seem to assume that it just does its own thing in the background, you know, and you drop everything for loads of washing, for family lunches, for school runs, you have to keep making it important for yourself, you know. Yeah. Treating it like a business.
That's really good advice. Thank you. That's great advice. And actually, I've got one final question, if you don't mind. And I didn't actually cue you up with this one. So no problem if you don't want to answer. But I was just thinking that bringing it back to this week and trying to raise awareness of autism, is there one thing about autism that you would like people to take away? You know, if they've got to the end of this podcast and is there one thing that you'd like people to perhaps know or think about?
For me, it's you know, nobody's perfect, and we all judge each other and we all make comparisons, and even autism parents do it. So for me, it's one of the captions on my t-shirts. It's just to stop, think, and be kind, because you never actually really know what's going on in someone's life and mind. And I could draw that all towards autism and being an invisible disability, but it's everything, isn't it? We, you know, it's the one thing we can aspire, you know, we can look up to autistic people for, because if you ask an autistic person how they are, I mean, it's such a bizarre question. In our social world, we go, "Oh, I'm fine, thanks, how are you?" And if you're not fine, an autistic person would never say that they're fine when they're not, but we do. And it's just those constantly, it's a choice you make, and you have to remind yourself. If you're out and about in a shop, even if it's got nothing to do with autism, you look at someone and, you know, we all do it, don't we? Like, "Oh, what's up with him?" Or, "That's a bit odd." Or, "Geez, did you see what she's wearing?" Kind of whatever. Just those constant little reminders to yourself. Stop, think, be kind. You never really know.
I think that's wonderful advice. Thank you. And yeah, something I try and remind myself such a lot is that you don't know what's going on someone else's head. You don't know what kind of day they've had. You don't know what phone call they've just taken. You don't know what's they're worried about. Yes. And yeah, I think just remembering to just, yeah, be kind, as you say, I think is great advice for all of us, all of the time.
No, as autism parents, we are pretty intensely in our journeys, and I think some of the time we were just expecting people to be better, but they're not, you know, and you just have to be, yeah, you have to be kind.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think that's a brilliant reminder for absolutely for everyone in all situations. I think, yeah, I think that's something that we can all do. And thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your time and for sharing everything. I really enjoy talking to you, and thank you.
I've loved meeting you, and thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute honor. It's the first time I've done something like this, so it's a real treat. Thank you.
Oh, that's exciting. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do leave me a review. That really helps other people to find this podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and do tell your friends about it too if you think that they also might enjoy it. You can find me at vickyweinberg.com. There you'll find link to all of my social channels. You'll find lots more information, all of the past podcast episodes, and lots of free resources too. So again, that's vickyweinberg.com. Take care, have a good week, and see you next time. Hi, this is just a little note. Say, if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.